I'm Mark Bayshore. Welcome back to Current State. Several times a week, our first guest writes about Michigan with a particular focus on the economy. Recently, the Detroit News' Daniel Howes has kept readers updated on the ins and outs of the UAW Detroit 3 contract talks. And as always, the road ahead for the city of Detroit, but he's also spent some time analyzing the Courser Gamrat scandal. Daniel Howes, welcome to Current State.
Thanks for having me.
We learned yesterday that the UAW has selected Fiat Chrysler as its strike target. Can you help us understand why FCA and what this means?
Well, it's kind of hard to say quite right now what it means, aside from the fact that it means that Sergio Marchionne is going to take a lead role in crafting this next contract for the automakers. He and UAW President Dennis Williams have a long history together, dating back to the time when Sergio became CEO of Case New Holland, and Dennis was a regional director in the UAW and also and still does sit on the board of Navistar International. I think they have a very good working relationship. I think the question now becomes, what kind of innovative deal are they able to put together? Dennis has floated some ideas about a healthcare pool for active employees. I think the automakers are looking at that, and I'm sure Sergio is interested in shaping that because it has a lot of implications for cost. And probably more importantly, as a lot of your listeners know, there's been a lot of talk about the second-tier wage structure, where certain workers are paid less money but doing the same job working on the line because of when they were hired. And Sergio has made it very clear that he would like to do away with that and have a harmonized wage rate, which is, of course, music to the UAW's ears, but it really depends on the details and what that looks like.
And Dennis, a week or so ago, Daniel Howes, you wrote that the atmosphere surrounding the contract talks between the UAW and the Detroit 3 were noticeably non-combative, with a strike target chosen and with the contracts between the UAW and the Detroit 3 formally expiring today. Is that about to change?
Not yet. You'll note that they don't even really call the company a strike target anymore. They call it a lead company. They've tried to even use language that to distance this process from the past. And I think Dennis Williams' behavior as the president of the UAW even more so. You talk to people that have been around this for 30 plus years, and they will tell you that these negotiations always take the tenor from the president of the union. In past years, you would have UAW presidents who would go on radio stations in Detroit and deliberately talk over the media, talk over the negotiators, and talk directly to their people through the radio. You can't even get Dennis Williams on the radio. He won't do it. He is very businesslike in how he approaches this. I've talked to people that I've known for 20 years covering this thing, and they will tell you they've never seen anything like this. It's very businesslike, very quiet, very non-confrontational, at least publicly. That doesn't mean that there aren't things going on behind the scenes, but this is very much driven by Dennis Williams.
Yeah, you wrote, I'll quote one of your columns, Williams is rewriting the playbook. So for months and months, let's go a little bit deeper on the two-tier wage system. For months, it's been reported that the unions want to, if not eliminate, at least bridge the gap in the two-tier system. Can we tell if that discussion is moving forward?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that discussion, that is a point of discussion. The question is, how does that happen? The union clearly wants to bring second-tier workers up, what they call close the gap or bridge the gap between the so-called legacy workers and the second tier. But I think they're unrealistic to think that that's going to be eliminated in certainly one contract, if ever. I think a lot of people believe that there's a possibility that there may in fact become more tiers, and the tiers will also be part of ensuring work in various new plants. The union has pushed the idea of having different wage classifications, which would be reviving an old system that the union and the companies got rid of several contracts ago, which was all these myriad classifications of jobs. But the union's looking at that as a way to potentially bring work back into the plants. Therefore, that somebody who works on the line may get paid the traditional wage rate, but somebody who's working in sequencing or some logistics or other kinds of things that would be considered a lower wage rate, and that eventually they, through seniority, could move up into an assembler's wage. Whether that gets any traction in these negotiations, I think, remains to be seen.
Daniel House is our guest here on Current State. Daniel's business columnist and associate business editor at the Detroit News. Your paper's Sunday editorial focused on the importance of lowering health insurance costs for the Detroit Three. You alluded to this earlier. Go a little bit deeper with us on that. I know the VEBA, the so-called VEBA, works its way into this discussion. What exactly do you expect we'll be looking at here?
Well, the VEBA was, of course, was created out of the 2007 talks, and really was a transformational for the auto companies and for the union in multiple ways. And what it does, what it did, was create a trust that the retirees, their health care liabilities went into that trust, and that trust is then responsible for financing those liabilities. What the union has done in running this thing is they've learned a lot, like you would in any situation when you take on a responsibility, and if you actually accept the responsibility and do it, you learn a lot about what you're doing. And they've been able to manage it pretty effectively. They've been able to restore a vision and dental coverage, and they're poised to restore hearing coverage as well. And so one of the proposals that Dennis Williams is pushing is kind of based on the learnings that they've had in the VEBA, and that's his idea of creating a healthcare pool to cover active workers, and potentially, theoretically, in his mind, is also to bring the salaried workforce into it as well as a way to get much more buying power out in the marketplace. The truth of the matter is that health care continues to be a rising cost for the automakers. Even though they're no longer responsible directly for retiree health care, they are responsible for active health care, and that's for hourly and salaried. So they're going to be very interested in looking at ideas and working through these kinds of things. But what the details are at this stage of the game, we really don't know, because they've kept a lid on these negotiations, the likes of which I haven't seen in 20 years.
We'll clarify, VEBA stands for Voluntary Employees Beneficiary Association. So
correct.
The VEBA plan. Let's switch gears here a little bit. You wrote on Friday of the Courser Gamrat finale that the episode demonstrates the superficiality of our politics and the incidental place of taxpayers in it. Expand a little bit on each one of those, one at a time, please. How did this put superficiality on display?
Well, I think they're related, I'd have to say, Mark, both incidental to taxpayers. I mean, let's think about this a minute. You know, this thing erupts, thanks to my colleague Chad Livengood in our Lansing Bureau, who'd done fabulous work on this story. This thing erupts, August 7th initially?
Yeah.
And this legislature comes together in record time to do what they're going to do, to first investigate this. And then secondly, they come to the conclusion that they're going to expel these two lawmakers. Meanwhile, we've been waiting for how long for a roads package? How many sessions? But when all of a sudden the majority looks at a situation that is politically damaging to their brand, they move with lightning speed to take care of a problem that affects, who does it really affect? It maybe affects the party. It affects the people in those two districts. But other than that, it's just it's a circus. But meanwhile, we've got the rest of us, 8 million, 9 million people around the state who are waiting for the legislature to figure out something on roads, and they can't get it done. They can't get it done in the summer. They can't get it done in the last session. Are they going to get it done this fall? Who knows?
Daniel, couldn't it be argued, though, that a faster resolution to the scandal would have enabled the legislature to get back at the road discussion faster?
Yes, it could be, and I'm sure that they would argue that. But I'm more interested in what they do, not what they say. And what they've done is they haven't done it. I think we have to be pretty honest about this. I mean, look, the whole situation was, number one, the Republicans saw this as a real problem for them politically, and the Democrats looked at it and said, yes, it is a problem for them politically, and that's why they were holding out until they were able to extract the concessions in the middle of the night that the attorney general was going to conduct an investigation, which apparently he was already doing.
You wrote at length about Detroit's bankruptcy recently. You've covered this in depth for many, many months now, along with its emergence from bankruptcy. And we continue to hear about good developments. Talk to us about the relative health of the city of Detroit right now.
Well, look, the health of Detroit, this is a process. The bankruptcy was a very important piece in the process. Dan Gilbert, Quicken Loans chairman, buying 80-plus buildings in Detroit is part of the process. The investment, and he's invested alone a couple of $1 billion in the city of Detroit. You had a lot of other companies, small and large, kind of wanting to be part of the party, if you will, and moving into Detroit. It is a very dynamic process right now. And if you drive around the city or you walk around downtown, things change on a weekly basis. There's a lot of energy. People are excited. When there are events, there's clearly a lot of pent-up demand, not just in Detroit, but in the broader suburbs here, people that will go downtown to go to events and whatever they may be. I think this is going to continue as long as we have a couple of things in place. One, as long as is the business community is engaged. Two is you have a city hall that is moving forward and dealing with problems that previous city halls wouldn't deal with or couldn't deal with. And that's both the Duggan administration and city council. And this mayor is much more adept than the last three mayors that I ever saw, or four, at managing political relationships with city council and being able to get things accomplished. And if not by unanimously necessarily, but with a majority of votes. And this mayor is very, very good at this. And I think that's critically important. And the final piece, of course, is the macroeconomy. I mean, as long as the United States economy is growing and we're not going into a big recession and going in reverse, I think the story of Detroit is going to continue to be one of improvement. But you have to have those constituent pieces all moving in the same direction, and right now they are.
You've continued to write about serious concerns about the Detroit public schools. Various reforms have been proposed fairly recently. This is another issue that the legislature and the governor could arguably spend a lot more time on than they have recently. What does DPS need specifically?
Oh, Lord. A new leadership, a new everything. I mean, it's a very sad situation, frankly. You know, they've lost tens of thousands of students, and there have been studies done, and that despite that decline, they still have had the same size administration. They need for one thing, it seems to me, a real restructuring of the administration. But there needs to be an understanding of what public education is in the city of Detroit. You have a lot of charter schools that have undercut the public school system to a sense that they're scattered all over the city, and in some places they can be clustered, and they will draw students, and you won't have the proper public schools in the same area. It's a mess, and there was a lot of talk about it at the beginning of the year, and the governor made a lot of put a lot of emphasis on it in the first quarter, maybe into the spring, and it's really kind of gone silent in the past few months.
Daniel Howes has been our guest here on Current State. Daniel is business columnist and associate business editor at the Detroit News. Great conversation, Daniel. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Mark.